This is Radio Equal Shot with your host, Alex Smith.
Now that climate change has melted the Arctic sea ice, for part of the year at least, Russia is scrambling to grab any new oil, gas, or coal that suddenly becomes available along their northern shore. That way, just so you understand, climate change helps humans make climate change worse. But that is not the bottom of crazy. You haven't heard outright madness until you hear this story from Jan Haverkamp. Jan is a trained scientist and a specialist in nuclear energy and radiation. He works for Greenpeace in Central Europe. Jan co-founded the Brussels-based NGO Nuclear Transparency Watch. Haverkamp teaches environmental communication at Masaryk University in the Czech Republic. For years, Jan lived and worked from Prague, but now he's back in the Netherlands. From Amsterdam, Jan Haverkamp, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Jan, if we were looking at the big barge called the Academic Lomonosov, what would we see?
You see a 144-meter-long brown-black block with a central block on top of it. 144 meters is quite long. I've seen it in the Baltic Sea with on the background a few container ships. Then it's not that big. It's 30 meters wide. It's about 28 meters high. In the central part, this extra block on top, there is the place where two icebreaker reactors are situated. It didn't look very pleasant. It looks quite ugly, but the artist's impressions are a lot better. It's supposed that it's still going to be painted over. The artist's impressions have made it very beautifully white and blue. So far, it looks really also not only ugly from the inside, but also ugly from the outside.
And before we dig deeper into this story, Jan, what makes this nuclear barge stand out among all the other crazy news these days?
This is the first purpose-built nuclear power station that is situated on a barge. We've had one earlier, which was the U.S. Sturgis, an old Liberty ship from the Second World War, which was equipped with a submarine reactor and provided power for the Panama Canal Zone for 7 years until they rejected it from there because it was running relatively often into trouble. That one has only been decommissioned or is in decommissioning at the moment, and the reactor was only removed last year. You can already see a little bit how complex it is to deal with something like a floating nuclear power station. The operation in the Panama Canal Zone was in the 1960s, and decommissioning was only now.
The Russians and the Soviet government before them put nuclear reactors in everything from icebreakers to submarines. What is their safety record?
That is not so good. We've had accidents during construction, during maintenance. We've had accidents on full sea, and those include also several where there have been meltdowns, so fuel meltdowns, during a testing problem in Nizhny Novgorod, what is now Nizhny Novgorod and was still Gorky in the Soviet times. 29 people died. We've had several dozens of severe incidents, and several of these reactors are also still on the bottom of the sea because of the accidents that the submarines that were carrying them were submitted to.
Why did people in St. Petersburg protest operations building that barge, Academic Lomonosov?
Well, that was already last year. The initial start of the construction was not in St. Petersburg, but because of all kinds of internal trouble between different involved oligarchs, construction was moved to the Baltic shipyards in St. Petersburg. And that shipyard is situated very centrally. It is on 2.5 kilometers from the St. Isaac Cathedral, about 3 kilometers, 3 and a bit from the Hermitage. So it's bang in the center of St. Petersburg. And the idea was originally that when the construction was finalized, that the fuel would be loaded in the Baltic shipyard and that the barge would be tested there. Now, the testing phase is one of the more risky parts of the lifetime of a reactor, and people in St. Petersburg were not really very happy with it. There was a petition which drew 12,000 signatures, which for any petition in Russia which is critical on something that is done by the authorities is an enormous amount. And questions were asked in the Environmental Committee of the Legislative Council of the city, which then basically asked the authorities to not to load and test the reactor in the city, in the midst of a city with 5 million inhabitants. There was also a lot of pressure on this from the countries along the Baltic Sea, not as much because of the testing in St. Petersburg, but also at the moment that the reactors are tested, they're irradiated, which means that the radioactive contact is a lot higher than when there's no fuel on board. And they were very much afraid that when it would be transported, towed, because it does not have its own propulsion, so it will be towed through the Baltic Sea and along the Norwegian coast, in case of heavy storm and the thing running on the rocks, it might really be also an radiation risk for their shore. So they put up quite a lot of diplomatic pressure on Russia as well. And the result was that last year, Rosatom decided not to load and not to test it in St. Petersburg, but tow it empty to Murmansk. And that is where it has now arrived 2 weeks ago, and where it is to be loaded in the coming months and then tested.
And can you just briefly tell us, our listeners, where Murmansk is?
Well, St. Petersburg, as you may know, is on the Baltic Sea coast. So you have it's very near Finland and Estonia in the northern part of the Baltic Sea. Murmansk is in the northwest of Russia. It is not so far from where Norway touches Russia and where Finland touches Russia.
So it's up in the Arctic Sea, really?
It is already in the Arctic Sea, yes.
Okay. Now, you have said previously that the design of this barge as a floating platform for reactors is not safe. Could you tell us why?
Well, it is, first of all, if you build a nuclear power plant on a floating structure, you have to be quite weight conscious. That means that a lot of the very heavy end-of-pipe solutions that we put on nuclear power stations to prevent at any time radioactivity coming out, a lot of those kind of very heavy measures cannot be taken on a barge. On top of that, the space is very limited. And that means also that you are cutting corners with the type of safety measures that you can implement. That means that the risk of something going wrong is just higher than when we compare that with a land-based nuclear power station of the last generation. That is one part. The other part is it's on a barge. And when that barge comes loose, it could either be thrown on the rocks in a storm, or during transport, it could also run onto ice, and the hull could be torn open, like for instance happened with the unsinkable Titanic. That also adds to the extra risk. There are two issues that add extra risk, and for that reason, environmental organizations like Greenpeace, but also like Bellona and others, are very critical about the introduction of floating reactors, be it on barges or in submarines or on icebreakers, into a pretty hostile environment as the Arctic.
Is there a significant storm risk for the waters where this barge is intended to go, and where is it intended to go?
Well, it is intended to go to Pevek, and Pevek is in Chukotka, which is the furthest northeastern province of Russia, the one that is also nearest to Alaska. Pevek itself is still about 1,000 kilometers further to the west, so it's not that near to Alaska. From Murmansk to Pevek, the voyage is almost 5,000 kilometers, or about 3,500 miles. That's a very long stretch, and it's an area that can see very heavy weather. That includes heavy storms, but it also includes unpredictable ice activity there, so icebergs or other floating ice in the region.
From what I can see, Jan, all the Russian nuclear reactors and new atomic constructions are run by a state-owned company called an English Rosenergoatom, or sometimes Rosatom. Is that correct?
Well, the Rosatom Group is, let's say, the center of this enormous conglomerate, which used to be the state ministry for nuclear energy in the Soviet times. After Soviet times, it was made into a separate corporate entity called Rosatom, and that has several hundreds of sub-units and companies under it. Yes, it's Rosatom that is responsible not only for all the civil nuclear power in Russia, but also for all the military nuclear power in Russia. They also build and oversee, for instance, the nuclear weapon part of the Russian nuclear system.
The Russian state-owned company is promoting this barge project with quotes from an Australian convert to nuclear power, Dr. Ben Hurd. Ben is the executive director of the NGO Bright New World. The Russian nuclear company Rosatom quotes Ben Hurd in their propaganda, I would call it, but in their promotion for this project, and they have been saying this: "It's fair to point out that the Arctic is a vulnerable ecosystem, but its greatest vulnerability is to climate change. This power plant is going to replace an existing coal-fired power station and provide zero carbon electricity generation for 50,000 people. There is literally no prospect of that energy coming from renewable energy sources in that location." Jan Haverkamp, what is your response?
Well, first of all, I mean, Pavek itself at the moment has 5,000 inhabitants, and the coal power station that Ben is referring to is the thermal or the heat, the generation plant that provides Pavek also with heat. That's a minor plant. What it also has to provide electricity for is some of the remaining mining activity in that area, and that includes, amongst others, also coal mining. So that is one part of the equation. It's not only going to replace an old coal power plant, it's also going to enable more coal mining, which means also more coal burning. But I think that is all slightly besides the point when Ben is claiming that it's impossible or that it's not likely that renewable energy will be introduced there. Then that is a conscious political choice. Rosatom is pretty new, is also working on renewable energy, but is still pretty new in it. They're now making their first experiences with wind energy together with a Dutch company called Lagerwey. But the potential for renewable energy in the area is enormous, and a small town like Pevek and the surroundings could easily be powered with a combination of wind power and, for instance, sustainably harvested biomass from the surroundings. That is as such not a problem. What is for us the larger concern is that this is going to be the first of a whole series of floating nuclear power stations, and that has to power the further development of the entire north, including Pevek. And that development is development for more oil, gas, and coal extraction. So for me, this is a bit of a double whammy. It is introducing nuclear risk in an area where nuclear risk is a larger problem than, for instance, in more moderate places like Fukushima or Belgium or in the United States. That is the first point. The second point is it is meant to increase extraction of fossil fuels. So for me, that is clear enough that Ben is used here for propaganda.
And it worries me that a supposed green voice in Australia is being used by Russian state propaganda for their nuclear adventures.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock, the world's largest environment program on nonprofit radio. Our guest is nuclear campaigner and scientist Jan Haverkamp. We're talking about a dangerous new develop by Russia, floating barges with nuclear reactors off to the Arctic. Many scientists on Radio EcoShock have explained why the Arctic is uniquely vulnerable to pollution. What happens when this atomic barge has a major nuclear accident or just sinks in a storm? And do the Russians explain any plan that they have for that?
There are no real plans for emergency response in these kind of cases. We've seen it in the past with the Kursk nuclear submarine. The attempts to have the reactors from that, and also, of course, the people who were on board, but the reactors from that salvaged, have cost several billions of dollars, so it's not very easy to do something when something goes wrong. But I think your listeners will be aware of the fact that with any nuclear power stations, we have severe problems with emergency response and preparedness. The more challenging the environment is, the more challenging also post-accident reactions are. Yeah, in this case, Rosatom is characterized very much is there are now not very many people living there. So the personal damage may be, because of that, lower. Of course, these reactors are smaller, and you do have to acknowledge that it's not as big as the reactors that went wrong in Fukushima or in Chernobyl. But still, for the people involved, that still will be a very big catastrophe in their lives.
What are the issues with refueling these reactors, and what happens to the highly radioactive spent fuel?
The reactors have a fueling cycle of about 2.5 years. The Lomonosov will be towed to Pevek, will stay there for 12 years. So that means that we will have about 4 or 5 fuel cycles there. That means that it has all its fuel, its fresh fuel on board. And at the moment that a cycle needs to be changed, there will be fuel change from the reactor. The spent fuel will be remaining on board, will be stored on board.
On Radio EcoShock, Dr. Helen Caldicott told us that all nuclear reactors create plutonium, and not just a little plutonium. Would this barge, Academic Lomonosov, have plutonium and other super radioactive fission products on it as well?
Well, the spent nuclear fuel from these reactors is like spent nuclear fuel from any boiling water reactor, so it indeed contains plutonium and other actinides. That spent nuclear fuel is extremely radioactive, and one of the design problems that we already know that the Lomonosov has is that after about 4 or 5 fuel changes, the radioactivity level from the storage of the spent fuel is so high that it will limit the amount of time that the crew can spend on board. They are planning to change that in new designs, but this design has that just as a problem, and it's one of the reasons that already after 12 years it will need to go back to Murmansk for unloading that spent fuel and for maintenance.
Britain used to dump radioactive barrels straight into the ocean until Greenpeace protests helped stop that. There are a number of reactors, I think it's 9, now sitting at the bottom of the sea, including the American submarine USS Scorpion. And the Japanese are now threatening to dump atomic pollution from blown reactors at Fukushima. Here's my question to you, Jan, as an environmental scientist. Have there been studies on how nuclear particles move around in the ocean?
Well, there are quite a few older studies to the spread of, well, of several things. I mean, it's first of all the spread of the fallout of nuclear weapons, how that has been spreading through the oceans. We also have seen assessments of what the dumping of radioactive waste by the UK, Switzerland, and the Netherlands, and Belgium, and Germany in the Atlantic, just south of the United Kingdom, has resulted in. Fission products from that, so isotopes from that dumping, and that was low and mid-level radioactive waste, has been found on both poles, so as we found both in the Arctic as also in the Antarctic, which means that it spreads out very far. That is an advantage. It means dilution. But the other side is, and that we've also seen, especially around these dumping areas, is that part of the waste is also bioaccumulating in the direct surroundings, which means that we have seen there catch of fish, which has been accumulating radioactive particles, isotopes, especially those that are fatty soluble. We know from around Fukushima that the pattern which fish is polluted and not is quite at random, and fishery there still is quite strictly monitored now 6 years after, because every now and then there is fish found which is over limits.
You know that Russia hopes to market these floating reactors to other countries. Who do they hope to sell to?
At the moment, they themselves claim that 15 countries have shown interest. I know for sure that some of that initial shown interest or claimed interest was not really there, like for instance Cabo Verde, the Cape Verde Islands in the Atlantic. They've had one visit once from Rosatom, which was then flagged and promoted his interest in this, but everybody there said, oh, this is a crazy idea, we don't want it. But in the countries that are currently under discussion, we have countries like the Philippines, we have Indonesia, and we have Sudan.
Let's say Russia sells a floating reactor to Indonesia. Jan, do the Russians operate and control that reactor, or is there a chance for nuclear proliferation here?
That is difficult to say at this moment, because these talks and ideas are still in a very, very early stage. We know that currently with normal reactors, Rosatom, I mean, you know that the international reactor market is in big trouble because nuclear power has simply become too expensive to market. And financing is the big bottleneck for new programs. And Rosatom has solved it so far by offering countries not only to build reactors, but also to give them either a loan for the full or 90% or 80% of the construction cost, or the option that Rosatom itself will own the reactor and run it and only sell the electricity, like, for instance, in Turkey. I have no idea what in the end the idea will be for floating reactors, but most likely will be that it will be a lease option, so that the country will rent the reactor from Rosatom and pay for that a certain amount of money, and then can use the electricity from it. The question is then, who is going to operate it? Will that be Rosatom, or will that indeed be the country that is here in hands? Now, some countries or several countries are looking to nuclear power as a means to obtain nuclear knowledge. And for me, that means that there is a proliferation risk. If I look to a country like Iran, I've got no idea whether they have a bomb. I do know that there are factions within Iran that would like to have a bomb. We even had in Poland, there is a whole discussion going on about Poland building its first nuclear power station. Yes or no, even there we've had voices and factions that said, well, we should get this nuclear knowledge and this nuclear experience so that in 40 or 60 years from now, we would be able to build our own bomb and we would be able to get back Lviv or Vilnius. I mean, there's mad people in every country, and it depends very much on political developments how this knowledge is used. If you spread these kind of floating reactors in their hundreds all around the globe, then that definitely supports proliferation also of nuclear weapon knowledge and probably also of nuclear weapon production.
And there is, sadly, news that both China and Japan are working on floating nuclear reactors. And from my point of view, if we spread floating reactors around the world, we're also creating new targets for terrorism or in a war. Most land-based reactors, as you said, have some protective shell. Are these seagoing reactors hardened against hits by something like a rocket-propelled grenade or even an aircraft flying into them?
You can do a lot with steel, but because you have to be careful with weight, the protection is not as good as we see it on board of a nuclear submarine. It's definitely not as good as you would see it in Generation 3 plus nuclear reactors, which are protected against also the impact of a moderately large passenger airplane. That is not possible in this form. Plus, we have, of course, the problem that if you are able to create a leak in the reactor, that probably also will mean a leak in the barge itself. If it's sinking at the moment, if reactor material hits seawater, you will get a water explosion. And with that, most likely also a far faster emission of radioactive substances from the reactor. The sheer amount also of small reactors that are dreamed of would increase also the chance of a potential terrorist attack at a certain moment. All these things add up, and for me that's a reason to say I don't think that this is the way we need to go, apart from the fact that it's also very costly. The Lomonosov is in construction and operation not cheaper than the very large nuclear power stations that are currently built and that currently are far too expensive to operate on the market. So also there, it doesn't really make sense.
Is it safe for Russian journalists to criticize Russians' reactor schemes?
There is quite a bit of critical noise about this scheme, independent Russian media. The only problem is that the independent Russian media have a very small reach nowadays. You do not talk about television, but you talk about some of the printed media and some radio and a lot of them on the social media, on the internet. The reach is very limited, and we know from experience that people criticizing these kind of projects also indeed have to count with intimidation. It's one of the reasons that I'm working on this with our Nordic offices and the Greenpeace Central Europe, that the Russian office is not part of our work there.
If you had to list your three upcoming priority issues, Jan Haverkamp, what would they be?
That goes already beyond only floating nuclear power stations. I think if we look at the development of the energy system, we need to stop being diverted by nuclear power as a technology. Nuclear power will not deliver anything substantial, and what it can deliver, it will deliver far too late for playing a role in the whole climate discussion, because it delivers it for such a price that we can do it a lot cheaper with other technologies nowadays. Nuclear is not part of that solution, but it is part of an existing problem. And what I would like to see is that we turn around the discussion with and within the nuclear industry and within authorities and nuclear authorities away from new production, from new reactors towards the legacy that 60 years of nuclear power have left us with. We have no way of dealing with radioactive waste anywhere yet. The projects that are ongoing in Finland and Sweden and France are currently hitting technical obstacles that might well prevent them from ever going into operation. We have no plan B, but we do have 300,000 tons of heavy radioactive, of high-level radioactive waste all around the world. That is, for me, a nightmare. We know already that our generation, your and my generation, will not be able to come with a solution. I know that the generation of my children will not be able to come with a solution. But we do have the responsibility to at least reduce the risks of that as much as we can. And it's not happening at the moment. The third point for me is we need to think a lot more about how we can protect ourselves against potential nuclear emergencies and then also draw conclusions from that. We've seen what the Fukushima catastrophe has done. It made it necessary to evacuate 160,000 people. About 60,000 of them still have not been able and will never be able to return to their houses. That is a scar on the planet. But if I look at other places where we now have running nuclear power stations, also there we cannot really safeguard the people around it if it really goes wrong. And I think that if we are honest about that and if we honestly look at what is in place and what we could expect, we have to draw conclusions for the reactors that are currently in operation and we have to phase them out as soon as possible. We've gotten sufficient examples to show that it can be done. Germany is a pointing case. But we also see it now in countries like Sweden, which is going to a nuclear phase out. We see it in Switzerland, Belgium. We have seen it in Taiwan. It is possible to turn that development to one that gives hope to the planet, that tackles climate change in a way that we do not waste money, we do not waste efforts, we're not diverting our attention from what really needs to be done. The technologies are there. It needs political will. And that is where I will be fighting for.
Our guest is nuclear campaigner and scientist Jan Haverkamp. Jan has been warning the world about a dangerous scheme to float nuclear reactors in the seas of the Siberian Arctic. The Russians will use it to exploit still more fossil fuels that endanger our common future. Find links to everything we've talked about in my show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Jan Haverkamp, thank you for sharing this news on Radio EcoShock.
You're welcome, and I hope that your listeners will help us turn this madness into a bit of a more sensible direction.
From madness to sanity, I'm Alex Smith reporting. By the way, if you tuned in partway or missed a show, you can get all our past programs absolutely free at my website, ecoshock.org. That's E-C-O, shock like an electric shock, .org. You don't have to sign up or sign in Just browse the programs and download to your phone, computer, or whatever you've got. It's possible to get a good education in climate change and the things that shape our future just from those interviews with the world's top experts, authors, and activists. You're welcome.